Hello and welcome to your politics show here on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. But before we get into the interview, I want to say some exciting news here from at the station, because from tomorrow, Monday the 8th of August, it's all change. All your favourite shows, presenters and music will carry on, but from Monday we will become Hertfordshire's Mix 92.6. But the usual content of the politics programme will continue, so every Sunday at midday you can look forward to your political interviews with one of Labour, Conservative or Liberal Democrat members of Parliament, and you can put your questions to them like usual as well. If you want to get involved, please do DM us here at any of the social media handles, or you can always email me as well, jason.mckenna@radioverulam.com. But for now, this week's interview is with Bambos Charalambos, the Labour MP for Enfield. So let's get into it. So welcome back to the show today, Bambos. There's a lot to discuss. A lot of things have changed since we last spoke. And first and foremost, we've seen Boris Johnson announce that he will step down as Prime Minister after a Conservative leadership election. Are you pleased that he's left, or are you worried about the potential new leaders?
Well, I'm very pleased that he's gone. I mean, he's one of the worst prime ministers this country's ever had. But I also am fearful as to what's going to come next, because I don't think that either Liz Truss or Rishi Sunak will do a good job as Prime Minister. But those are the two that one of those two will succeed. It looks more like it's going to be Liz Truss at this point. So I do have serious concerns as to what's coming next. But Johnson had to go. He, you know, he didn't have a plan. You know, he was, he lied and lied and lied. You know, he would announce things and then there'd be no follow up. You know, for instance, a plan for social care. You know, where is it? He announced that 2 years ago. No sign of it at all. You know, he's been found out trying to be deceptive. So things about the Partygate stuff. First saying that there were no parties, then there were parties, but they were actually work events. Then they were parties, but he wasn't there. Then he was there. And he's done it throughout. He will say anything just to, you know, get off the hook. And that's not what we want to see in a leader. We want leaders that are both honest and have moral principles. So, yeah, it's good that he's gone, but I fear for what's coming next.
Just on that point then, is there anything positive that you can say about his time as Prime Minister, even though you said he's one of the worst ever?
I'm struggling to think of anything positive. Guess he had a lot of energy, but that's that would be it. I guess there's not much I could say.
Let's move on to your own party then, because obviously this discussion around the Conservative Party leadership means we will have a new Prime Minister, but your party leader, Sir Keir Starmer, wants to be the next Prime Minister as well. We're a little while off from a general election, but economics and other kind of ideas are being discussed now. But there has been some criticism of the recent announcements of Sir Keir Starmer. First and foremost, he has started to he stated that Labour would not announce a single penny of day-to-day spending without saying how we would pay for this. Some analysts have stated that this sounds more fiscally conservative than both Sunak's and Truss's pledges. But are people misunderstanding his statements?
I think that the two things that people vote on to choose a future government is how they're going to handle the economy and how good the leader is. And if you can't show that you're economically coherent and have support from people to believe that you actually be able to run the country well and be economically responsible, then I think then you would struggle to get elected. You know, I remember Gordon Brown, you know, where before Labour got elected, he said he would stick to Tory spending plans to reassure the markets and to reassure the voters that Labour was serious about being in government. And I think that we saw what happened in 97 with the landslide victory that we got there. Obviously, things are different now, but you have to show that fiscal and economic responsibility to make sure that you are competent enough to be in power. So I think that's where that's coming from. And people, you know, they're asking us at the last election, how are you going to pay for all this? So I think they deserve to know. So I think we would want to let them know how we would pay for things. So I don't think that's irresponsible. I think that's exactly what we should be doing.
Well, the question wasn't really asking whether it was irresponsible or not. It was in terms of maybe the way that this message has come across. So just to explain a little bit further, does this mean going forward that every kind of idea is going to be costed and so you wouldn't possibly take out a long-term loan or maybe a large infrastructure project or things like that? Does everything have to be costed now?
Well, I mean, clearly long-term things, we would sort of be investing in things. I think one of the things we have announced is this $28 billion in investing in green jobs for the future. And by investing in that long-term and so showing that we're serious about it, and $28 billion is a big number, that will actually help long-term with fuel prices, with actually job creation. And that in turn will help sort of stimulate more revenues for HMRC, but also help the planet by helping us get as close to 1.5 degree C increase in the temperature. So I think you have to sometimes invest in the future long-term. So I think that's, so the short answer is, things will have to be costed, but you know, we'll still borrow for long-term projects like the $28 billion for the green investment that we want to put in for the long-term future of the country.
So is the ideas of Sir Keir Starmer then separation from Keynesian economics, which was obviously taxing the good times when you get into a high or good running economy, but then you save for the bad times and you spend then?
Well, we don't know what we're going to end up with in 2 years' time. So we have to like cut our cloth according to what we find the economic situation to be. So I think until we know that, then we probably won't be in the best, you know, it's pointless making projections now with things are going to get worse in 2 years' time, because then people would say, you know, you're just being irresponsible by doing that. You shouldn't just stick to slavishly follow a policy that's going to be incoherent in 2 years' time because of the economy is totally crashed.
So also at the moment, we've got conference time coming up. Can you give any special revelations for us?
It's above my pay grade. But I think there will be, you will see more policy announcements at conference. I think they have been overdue, and I think people need to get more of a flavour as to what Labour's about. In my my area of responsibility with the shadow FCDO team, I was pleased to see that Keir announced that we would restore DFID, the Department for International Development, that will be restored under a Labour government. And I've seen that David's also said that we will return to 0.7% investment in overseas aid, so to help the poorest people in the world. So those are two good things. In fact, ironically, that was a Tory pledge that they said they would stick to 0.7% aid in their manifesto that they didn't stick to. So things like that, people are reassured that that is what Labour's doing. You see other things that will be coming up at conference. So tune in at the end of September for more policy announcements.
One of the reasons you called for Boris Johnson to be sacked is that you stated that you had a belief that he lied over many issues, as we started the show with, especially over Partygate. But this month, we've seen Keir Starmer turn his back on two more of his apparent core pledges from his leadership campaign. These were about renationalising and defending free movement with the EU. How can the electorate trust anything that Sir Keir Starmer says when he can't keep to these pledges?
Well, I mean, two things there. I mean, first of all, Unlike Boris Johnson, Keir Starmer said that if he was found guilty of breaching any of the COVID rules, he would resign. So that shows like credibility and leadership on Keir's part, and a principled position that Boris Johnson was not willing to take at all. And when you're running for, I mean, Keir was running for leader about 2.5 years ago, and that was before COVID hit. That was before we were in this perilous state of the economy, where you know the cost of living crisis is really hitting. So clearly, you need to sort of revise things. You can't, you know, it'd be wrong to slavishly stick to things, even when that position has changed. So I think it actually does show leadership to be able to review the situation and say, okay, I'm going to do something different from that, rather than slavishly following something that that clearly has changed. So you have to have that flexibility as a leader to do that. So the short answer is no, I don't think that I think Keir can be trusted, and I think he's just shown leadership by being flexible to change his positions as things change around him.
So in terms of it then, if he makes a pledge now, can he change it in a year's time, 6 months' time, and you would say that that's still got integrity to it?
Well, it depends on the pledge and the circumstances. I mean, clearly, if you... you know, you need to explain why that change has happened. You know, you have to have that ability. You have to say, well, actually, I said that and I was wrong. And I've looking at all the evidence before me now. I would rather do this, do A instead of B. So I think you do have to have that flexibility. I mean, ideally, things would be, you would say things and things wouldn't change, you'd be able to implement that. But, you know, things change, and so you have to be flexible enough to change that, to change with them.
How flexible can one be, though, to change but still have core ideologies? Because some of these pledges, you know, from 1 to 7, economic justice, social justice, climate justice, these are overarching ideas. To what extent do you believe that people can be malleable but to still be said that they have a clear ideology? Because some of these ideas, like the EU situation, that is a total switch over from one viewpoint to another.
If you've got core values, I mean, I still think that, you know, we're not going to be rejoining the EU anytime soon. I think there will be closer working with the EU institutions. But I think it's, you know, we're fighting yesterday's battles there. And I think we need to make sure that we, you know, we've seen the queues at Dover. I'm sure that a Labour government would work to make sure there weren't queues at Dover as people are trying to get away on holidays. So I think there are things that a Labour government would do to cooperate more that wouldn't lead to, you know, the, you know, shocking situation we find ourselves in at the moment. So you need to have your core principles and your values. But around that, there may be sort of policy initiatives that you can change depending on where you find yourself. But you do need to have your core principles to be your guiding light.
Last month, when I interviewed you, you said that you had not been told by Keir Starmer that you were banned from attending strikes. But during the latest round of strikes, this has been proved to be the message. One of your fellow ministers, Sam Tarry, has been sacked from this position, his position, over attending a strike. Putting the issue of the particular strike aside, we won't debate that, but does it not make you uneasy that your leader is forcing you into a position or you risk being sacked? Does that seem the actions of a democratic leader?
Look, my understanding is that Sam was sacked for speaking to Sky News without the authority of the party. Whenever we get a request for a media round, then you have to submit it and it has to be approved by the party. Otherwise, there is no discipline, there is no control. And also, Sam's speaking about things that were wrong. They weren't the policy situation. They weren't the agreed position. So in order to make sure that we're not seen as being saying different things. We need to have discipline, and we need to make sure that we have a clear message that is being put out there. And on sadly, on those fronts, Sam was wrong. And, you know, personally, I'm very sad to see Sam go from the front bench. I think he's a very able politician, and he was a very able shadow minister. But you do need to have discipline in these things, otherwise things aren't going to work.
So with this situation, I just want to ask a little bit further, because as you said there, Sam Tarry was gone for speaking out of turn, if you will, for going on without permission. But surely Rachel Reeves should have gone for conflicting lines on rail nationalisation, or David Lammy for making up policy on the spot about the BA strike, which, again, we talked about last month and you had confusion over yourself. So why was it Sam Tarry had to go, but then in those two situations, both of those MPs were either given the benefit of the doubt or a second chance?
Well, I don't know what conversations have been had with either of those in the Whip's office, and that would be a matter for the Whip's to follow up on. But clearly, we should all follow the same rules and all be singing from the same song sheet.
Let's move on to one last thing about the party before we get on to the local issues. Earlier this month, we saw the Ford report published. The report has highlighted a lot of problems that still exist within the party and has said improvements are needed to be made. Sir Keir Starmer's reaction to this report has been criticised by some within the party, especially with the focus on only addressing anti-Semitism. One of these people was Diane Abbott, who has said she's received no apologies after racist and sexist remarks were made about her that have been revealed in the report. And she said that Sir Keir Starmer needs to combat racism in the Labour Party as energetically as he has done with anti-Semitism. Anything else suggests that he doesn't really care. So why has a line of positivity have been the general message in the media from the Labour Party leadership when there's still many issues to solve, Bambos?
I think where we are now to where we were 5 years ago, and this report goes back to events in the election in 2017. So I think it is a historic. I think the party is entirely different and very different place from where it was then to where it is now. So, and you know, Keir wasn't, you know, he'd been an MP for 2 years in 2017, so he wasn't, you know, anywhere near the sort of the leadership. Clearly, we want to root out any form of racism and anti-Semitism in the party. They should both be treated with equal severity, and we need to root it out so it's got no place in the party. I think the party is in a very different position. I have enormous sympathy for the racism and the abuse that misogyny that Diane Abbott gets. I think she gets a quarter of all the hate and abuse of all MPs. I have enormous respect and sympathy for Diane Abbott for her position, and we do need to listen to what Diane says and act on it. But equally, Keir wasn't responsible for the actions of people who were in the party 5 years ago who were saying really appalling things. And I think we need to learn lessons from the Ford report, implement the recommendations, and make sure that that episode is put into the realms of history and we learn from it and we never have a repeat of that ever again.
Let's move it to a local issue, and the heat wave has severely affected Enfield. We saw many fires across the area, and I'm sure on an individual level, a lot of people struggled with the heat. But people are worried about serious problems due to the loss of their homes, businesses. I mean, Bambos, what can be done? And adding to this, we actually had a community question. The person sent in the message saying, should the local council or government step up and offer an emergency fund for these people who have lost their homes or businesses?
Yeah, it's a really good idea. Around the corner from where I live is that Axula restaurant, and that caught fire. And I know they just had it refurbished, and the damage done there was awful. Really, really sort of shocking how seriously damaged it was. I do think where the where damage has been done, where the insurance won't cover it, I do think the government should try and step in with some emergency funds. Obviously, it has to be done on a case-by-case basis. But it is deeply worrying that we're now seeing the effects of global warming causing, destroying buildings and affecting people's lives in this way.
So, as mentioned earlier, we have seen strikes this month. But are you also worried about the future of Transport for London, as the future funding of the transport system in London still has not been decided yet?
Yeah, it's deeply worrying. I mean, we need to make sure that TfL does have its long-term future agreed. There are, I mean, the idea that in order to make ends meet, that TfL would have to cut the number of bus routes is really appalling, and that programs like the getting newer trains on the Piccadilly line and you know the Bakerloo line extension are also sort of a subject. I mean, London has a huge number of people that live in London that use it, use the transport system. And also lots of tourists. I mean, I'm in Westminster today, and the amount of tourists that are around is wonderful to see. But they rely on public transport as well. So we need to make sure we have a proper investment in TfL and not cut back and make things worse. And also, I mean, if you want to tackle climate change, surely what you should do is try and make sure that there's more availability of buses and trains and not deter people from using public transport. So it's very wrong-headed of the government to not give a long-term plan for TfL for their funding for the long term.
What are the justifications for this situation that hasn't been resolved?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Grant Shapps that. But yeah, I think they think that TfL have been very generous in giving things that outside London they wouldn't have. They were particularly annoyed that 16 and 17-year-olds were given a pass to be able to travel freely on transport. So I think they didn't particularly like that. So there are things that they basically they want to like. Their idea of levelling up is to punish London, which is really appalling. And this is one of the ways that they're doing it.
And what would Labour's answer to this be if you were in charge?
I'd be very biased being a London MP with five tube stations in his constituency and a bus garage as well. So I think the, yeah, we need to make sure that if we truly believe in dealing with the environment and changing people's habits, then you do need to invest in public transport, not just in London, but across the whole country. So certainly I would want to see more investment in things that help people get off the road and use their cars less and get them sort of using public transport more, because that benefits all of us in the long run.
Now, on this issue of the TfL funding issues, the funding means that there are considered changes to the 259, 279 and 349 routes serving Enfield. This would see a reduction in services, many stations kind of removed from these bus routes. Will you try and work with TfL to ensure that these vital local bus routes are as unaffected as possible?
Very much so. Most of those routes, I think the routes you mentioned, actually, I think maybe only one of them might go into my constituency, but certainly I'd work with my colleagues to help that. I mean, I think all people in Enfield need to be served as best possible. For some people, the bus routes are their lifeline, and to have a bus route sort of stop short or not go to where they want it to go can really restrict their options, and we want to make sure that that doesn't happen. So I'd be campaigning alongside my colleagues for these routes to remain as they are.
Let's move it to the community questions then. You know, those were on local issues, but this is from our listeners. And Sarah wanted to ask a question. She said, I've seen an anti-Semitic newspaper handed around quite a bit by Enfield Chase Station. What can be done to stop this?
well, this is really concerning. If she's got more information, I'm certain this is potentially a hate crime. So I think if she has information, she should first report it to the police. But if she has done and it hasn't been followed up, then if she can contact my office and I'll make sure that it's followed up.
Let's move it to Andy's question. He said, my elderly friend with cancer has no choice but to get someone to drive her to the North Mid. This means weekly it's costing her upwards of £30. She was the teacher, now living on a pension. She has very little. She cannot afford a new car, especially during this cost of living crisis. She cannot take public transport because if she gets COVID, it could kill her weakened immune system or will stop her getting treated. Bambos, I'm annoyed at you. How can you support ULEZ charges without exemptions for people without a choice?
Well, I think I'm very happy to look at this particular case. I mean, there are other options. There are there's Dial-A-Ride that sometimes can take people to hospital if they need treatment. You know, I think that there may be a case for exemptions. So I'm happy to put forward that case to the Mayor of London for exemptions to apply for people who are being taken to hospital. But let's not kid ourselves. Polluting cars also kill people, and they kill thousands of people every year because of the because of the pollution that those cars emit. And so we need to... Long term, we need to make sure that cars are not polluting because people will die from the fumes from those cars. And we want to make sure we live in a society where people can be as healthy as possible. Schools like Bowes, Bowes Primary School, it's on the North Circular Road. The pollution there is absolutely appalling for the school kids. Playing in the playground there is potentially, you know, hazardous to, you know, the lungs of the kids who are playing there. It's just, and it shouldn't be that way.
Well, we'll try and pass on Andy's information to you, Bambos, on this issue. Tony has a question. He says, Bambos, there's another high-rise building proposal. This time it's next to Brimsdown Station. Obviously, that is outside of your constituency, but I guess he's talking about generally. He says that these are getting ridiculous, are ugly to look at, and spoiling the area with too many people being pushed into too few stretch local services. This needs to stop. Please oppose this. I mean, what's your thoughts on Tony's question, Bambos?
I totally agree with Tony. I think that I have serious concerns about not just the proposals, but sometimes the quality of the proposals. Obviously, developers try and get away with as much as they can. They're often building things that the borough doesn't need. So what we're short of in the borough are more family-sized properties, but the developers seem hell-bent on having lots of one- and two-bed properties because they get a greater return for their money on that. We just need to make sure we oppose them. We can only oppose them using the planning regulations that are before us. So I've certainly challenged the Southgate Office Village Development. I've opposed the Cock Fosters development as well. So these are things that we do need to fight and to challenge. And I'm sure that councillors and local MPs will also be challenging that one.
Tina has asked, Bambos, I've seen in other areas, maybe other countries, where if you see a car parked in a cycle lane, you can use an app on your phone, send a picture through to a local authority and get the person ticketed. Why isn't something like this brought in?
I think it should be. I'm surprised that it isn't. the council do have enforcement officers, but I'm not sure how many of them work in the evenings, because often this happens in the evenings, particularly around popular restaurants and bars. So I think maybe trying to encourage the enforcement officers to go out in the evening would not be a bad thing. But if what I would suggest to Tina is to take a picture and just send it to the council to report it.
So let's bring it on to Ian's question. He said, I saw an Enfield dispatch. There are more than 1,000 residential tower blocks in London that still have serious fire safety issues. How many are in Enfield, and are you worried in future heat waves over their safety?
I think the council did do an audit straight after the Grenfell Tower fire. And I think they found that there weren't any that had dangerous cladding in Enfield. So I think we were quite lucky with that. I mean, there were very few tower blocks over the height where it was deemed to be dangerous. But it is a concern that cladding could be... could cause serious, could cause fire in if there's hot weather. So I do hope the government gets a move on to make sure that cladding is removed. Leaseholders should not have to pay for it because it's not their fault. Many leaseholders are stuck in a situation whereby they can't get rid of the... they can't sell their house. They're stuck in a state of limbo because the cladding has yet to be removed, and the properties are worth very little because of that. So I do have enormous sympathy for them, but thankfully that's not a situation we have in Enfield. But thanks to Ian for bringing it to my attention.
Kyle has asked the last question for this month. He said, on one of your previous interviews, you said you'd committed to going more green in your office. Can you give any examples of how you've done this?
Well, I use public transport to go to Westminster, and in my constituency, I walk to my office. So you'll see me walking to and from the office. So I use the car a lot less. My staff, some of them cycle, so we're looking to get sort of a cycle rack for the back of the office. But also things like plastics. So I did something called the Big Plastic Count, and was counting on how many plastic containers and plastic bottles we were using in the office. So certainly cutting down on plastics is one of the things I'm very conscious of, and making sure we can recycle it as much as possible. I think that's, and also the other thing is we use a lot less paper than before, because I think in a way COVID actually demonstrated how little we needed paper. We can do a lot more things online, although that brings other challenges with it. So certainly using less paper, we're not totally paperless, but we do use a lot less paper than before.